This is How to Business and Show Business, where we talk about the business of show, the podcast that discusses ways to work smarter, not harder. If you're a performer at the beginning of your career or a student interested in going into the performing arts, this is the podcast for you. For more about the podcast, you can find our website at businessandshowbusiness.com. There you can learn more about the business of performing arts with coursework, videos with shop talk, and interviews with other professional performers. Now here's your host, Corben.
Hello, I'm your host, Corben, and welcome back to another episode of How to Business and Show Business. But before we get started, go ahead and click that subscribe button so you can stay caught up anytime there's a new post. Actors, thanks for joining for another episode. I'm really looking forward to this conversation as we talk about the agent perspective with Josh Sassanilla. Now, Josh is an agent based in New York City, and what I find and you will find, which will be so fruitful in this conversation, is Josh is actually a former performer himself. He still performs, but as it pertains to this conversation, transitioning from actor to agent, there will be a lot of insight in this conversation that I know someone, if not you, will find beneficial, okay? So without further ado, here's part one of that conversation.
Josh, how would you describe yourself to people?
How do I describe myself to people? We're just getting right into it.
Yeah, this is the intro, man.
Oh, man. You know, I describe myself as somebody who wears a lot of hats. I am somebody who loves actors and loves everything show business, and ultimately what that led me to is kind of trying to figure out a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And you know, my journey led me from being an actor to being a director choreographer to being a producer, some of which of those jobs I like more than others. And I think then the producer into the just consulting, and then the consulting into the agency, and then all of that kind of happens every day when you're an agent anyway. So I don't have to take off all those hats very often because they're all kind of slightly useful doing what I am doing right now. Yeah. I'm also a writer and a creative and do a lot of stuff on that side too. I'm an artist. That's what I would say.
The jack of many trades.
A Josh of many trades.
A Josh of many trades, that's good. So being said, outside of that, or maybe some of that might pertain to this, what is a hobby and or interest that you have outside of show business?
Outside of show business, mm-hmm. Is there a place? I didn't know. No, actually, it's funny that this is a new thing. And I think this is born out of the pandemic a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm really becoming addicted to board games.
Hmm. What kind of board games?
All my other hobbies are within show business. Mm-hmm. Things like if I have free time, what else do I do? Yeah. Is in show business, but not free time. I love to play board games. I love strategy board games. I also enjoy doing puzzles with my mom when I'm with her. But
do you think it's just working the other side of the brain?
I'm not sure that it is actually. What's the game that we were playing last night is called Plunder, and it's basically like Settlers of Catan, but what you want Settlers of Catan to be, Catan, I don't know how to say it. And you're a pirate and you have to build a fleet and sail these little ships around and your opponents and whatnot. That's pretty fun.
Gosh,
I don't know. I have so many artistically centered things that I do that when I get away, it's rare. It's rarely, you know, anything other than art, I guess. But.
Well, and we'll get into it later. We'll get into it later in the conversation. But the business of show can't be all that. It does not solely revolve around the business of show. And I think that some people might not have something to live for or something outside of that. So I think that's genius. Puzzles, who would have thought, or just games and things that aren't related to the business of show? Because do you find that, especially with what you do as an agent, that it sometimes gets exhausting just talking about the business of show all the time?
I think there are things that I like to do more than others, but because of my writing projects and things like that, I'm not always talking about only one avenue of show. So I'm not always just talking about repping my actors. I'm also talking about how do we make a reading happen, which is a totally different conversation, or how do we deal with the website, which is a totally different artistic conversation, etc. So I don't know. No, I would say no. I don't get bored with talking about the business because I'm never just talking about one side of the business.
Taking it a little bit back, what was your first introduction to either the arts and or entertainment?
Oh, that's a great story, actually, that I've been telling a lot lately. My brother and my younger brother and I have three brothers.
Who's oldest?
I'm second to the oldest. So okay. My older brother, Jeremy, he sang in like a church group that when we were younger, and we were always doing sports, and then music was always kind of a thing because my mom played the piano for the church and my dad led music and later became a minister. And so there was always music in our household. And my brother got nabbed by who later would become one of my biggest mentors, my choir director, Shelley Johnson, in Indiana, where I went to school, because she knew Jeremy sang in these church groups. And it was the very beginning of what competitive show choir would later become, then Glee, more years later than I would like to say. So we were all in sports doing this thing, and my brother got nabbed to be in show choir, and he was like, this is pretty cool. Now, why this story is interesting is that my older brother, Jeremy, was the quarterback of our high school's football team and later got drafted to play baseball for the Detroit Tigers. So that's how big of a sports family we were in. So when my brother said, I'm going to do show choir, we're like, okay, how are you getting away with this? And we found that to be very interesting. So of course, my younger brother and I, we were locked and loaded. We liked music, but we went to the DeKalb County Free Fall Fair to watch my older brother sing and dance. And we didn't know he danced at all. And we knew he sang a little bit, but
that was he your brother? Favorite. Is he your brother?
Yeah, we wanted to check it out. Fully, I think maybe then in my younger adult life, we probably were going to laugh at my brother, you know? So we were just going to watch all that happen. And we went to the fair. They introduced this 40 person, half boy, half girl, crew of singer dancers. And I was there with, my brother and my best friend and the best man in my who would later become best man in my wedding, Evan. And we sat there and we watched this 20-minute show. And we were like, this is awesome. We should do this. We should sing and dance. This is the coolest thing. And then, so we were ruined. And the rest of our lives became getting into the show choir and then rising up through the ranks of the show choir and being a senior. So I learned how to sing and dance. My intro to musicals and plays was through a competitive show choir who in essence would put on 25 minute mini musicals, just different songs. Now, what was cool about my show choir where I grew up, it wasn't all just standing and shaking and baking, which is a show choir move that some show choir people might You do it at weddings. That's basically what it wasn't that. We got to do like Bon Jovi and Styx because our choir director, that's what she wanted to be. She wanted to rock and roll. We became a show choir known for rock and roll. So it was cool. And we got to do cool music. And it was really kind of an amazing foray into getting on stage, telling stories, doing it quickly. All of that then turned into, okay, now I want to be in the musicals, etc. I then became the one family member who had to pick between sports. Kind of about sophomore year, it's really hard to do baseball and show choir because there's so much overlap in Indiana. Mm. And I was the brother, and my younger brother too a little bit, who had to kind of pick, what are we going to do? And I was like, it's music for me, definitely music for me. So, and then I would later pay it back and go choreograph my high school's musicals. And, I'm still really, really close. My high school choir director's husband married my now ex-wife and I, so like I've always been really connected to them. And, you know, I owe a lot of my career to those people. That's a long-winded way of saying that's how I found.
Well, I mean, you just gave me a bulk of information, which ties into my next question. So right. Growing up in Indiana, the show choir, the 20-minute shows, how did a boy from Indiana then transition over to the East Coast, and why the East Coast as opposed to, I don't know, say Chicago or LA or even wanting to do Vancouver, Toronto?
I didn't even know what those places were when I was in high school. It wasn't even on my radar. What ended up happening is a man named Dwight Jordan, who was another one of my biggest mentors out of high school. I went to school in Indiana at a small school. My parents said, if you go locally, I'll buy you a car. And I hated, I absolutely, and now I see it, they were trying to save money. Yeah. But I'm so glad that they did. I said, I'll take the car because I hated high school. All I did was hang out in the choir room and the art room. Yeah. So I went for a year and found out, yeah, this was not for me. It's just not the way my brain works. I don't like the structure. If I don't like to learn something, if it's not something I want to learn, I might as well be elsewhere. That's kind of the way my brain works. But after I got done with my freshman year of school, Dwight said, hey, why don't you audition for the Six Flags show? And I auditioned, and it was a show called American Rock. And it was just like a 30-minute long review show where we kind of went through the decades and sang pieces of music. And so I, sang and danced to just hits, basically. So I went and worked at Six Flags that summer, did this show. And I was like, oh, hell yeah, I can get paid for this. I'm not going back to school. And I told Dwight, I go, look, man, I really like doing this. He's like, are you going back to school? And I'm like, not if you've got some jobs for me. And he said, well, what do you know about Branson, Missouri? And I was like, I've never, ever heard of this place. What is it? Now, at the time, Branson, Missouri, it was where kind of like retired country music artists went to have a show and kind of still be have celebrity. And there's a big theme park out there called Silver Dollar City. And it's, you know, kind of this like settlers type vibe with awesome roller coasters. I don't know how they marry those two things. They do. They have a 4,000 seat amphitheater out there called Echo Hollow. And so he goes, you want to come out here and do the show? Because you got a job if you want to come out here. So I went out there, and then I got to perform with some of the most talented people I've ever worked with. Just amazing singer dancers who find this kind of niche world out there doing review shows. And so the show that I was in at Echo Hollow was kind of a decade show as well, had some country music in it and kind of just really fits into what Branson had to offer. So I worked at this theme park and I met a girl there. Then we went to, we went out on a cruise ship after we left Branson. And when I came back, the land after working for Carnival Cruise Lines,
Shoreside,
Shoreside, as they say, you know, we went on another little bus and truck tour of another decade show that was fun. We were just singing and dancing. I was having a great time. Musical theater had drifted off into the distance, but we went through Chicago and one of the girls that was in the show was an equity actor. And she's like, hey, Mamma Mia is having auditions in Chicago. When we're in Chicago, we should go. And I was like, okay, sure, let's do it. And it was probably my first professional audition that wasn't for a theme park. I got the cruise ship job from a video of my work and things like that and recommendations. So when I went to this just kind of open Chicago call for Mamma Mia, I was completely green, had no idea what I was doing. I just had a good time, sang. My mom drove from Northeastern Indiana into Chicago because I got a call back and they asked me to go work on a monologue and bring in a monologue. So in the hotel that night, I tried to learn a monologue and kind of did basically a cold reading for the audition. I think ultimately a couple weeks later, I probably was a month later, I was in my choir room at my high school. And Eric Woodall, the casting director who was working for Tara Rubin at the time, called my mom, who gave him my high school phone number. And so my high school secretary forwarded the phone call to the choir room. So I got Mamma Mia in the Las Vegas company in the room where I learned to sing and dance, which was absolutely insane. I think I got the job because I was so kind of green and didn't have any idea. I wasn't walking in with any preconceived notions. But anyway, I got so lucky and booked that show, went out there for 3 years. And then I met somebody else who would later become my wife. We moved to New York after I'd been out there for 3 years. I became a swing in the show after starting in the ensemble. We moved out here. I pounded the pavement for about 3 years. I had my equity card, so luckily I didn't have to do the please see me non-equity route. So, you know, if there was a time to do it, that was the time, I think. And so I pounded the pavement. I booked a few small regional gigs, actually had a couple decent jobs. I did the world premiere of High School Musical 2 right as the housing market crashed. So we all thought we were going on tour. So I thought I booked a big tour. And that was like super rough. But came back to the city, got a couple more good jobs, and ended up getting the first national tour of Rock of Ages. That happened while I went out and did that, came back, got my Broadway debut on Broadway as a vacation swing in Rock of Ages. And while I was doing that, I was auditioning for Spider-Man, that crazy show, which ended up booking a vacation swing in that job as well. So I was vacation swinging two Broadway shows at once, which was interesting. Really, really fun. And then a job opened up there. Full-time. So I did Spider-Man until it closed. And then when Spider-Man closed, I went back to Rock of Ages, closed Rock of Ages. And then I was, I think, 32. And I went, oh gosh, what do I do now? Because my dream to be on Broadway had happened.
Yeah.
And while I loved the performing, I was starting to write, etc. And this may be a longer answer than you wanted, but I had met Anne because somebody had suggested me that I was in High School Musical with. You got to go meet Anne because I think you'd be really right for her. So Anne helped me, you know, get to where I ended up. But I called her. I said, "Hey, my musical that I'm writing is coming down the chute. I need to be close to the city. So if it's not Broadway, off Broadway, or something else, I really need to probably steer clear of those jobs because I didn't want to miss anything for about the show that I was doing. And that's how I ended up kind of here, established in the, here being, you know, the East Coast. It was really just how opportunities fell out in front of me and how my life unfolded, you know.
If you're comfortable sharing, who was Anne to you, and what function did she serve in your life to help you with this transition?
Sure. So Anne was the first agent that I ever had a meeting with. My wife at the time was signed with a big giant agency that shall be shall rename unnamed. And so I had seen kind of through her what happened in that regard. And I met Anne. I called because Leonard, the gentleman who is still a client, he set up the meeting. I called, she answered the phone. I was like, ooh, I know this is a little different because of the way the other agency operated. She set up a meeting. I went in and chatted. We laughed the whole time and had a great time. She signed me on the spot and she became my agent. And then over the next 6 or 7 years, I did my regional jobs, some of which I got on my own, and then kind of started to capitalize on some of my credits, got me in for some bigger stuff. And that's how I ended up on Broadway. It was a lot of my hard work and a lot of her connections and, you know, obviously the world is a crazy place because I started there and now I own and run her business.
Wow.
It's a pretty wild story.
Thank you for sharing that. Without getting too into it, because it is something that's very personal, near to dear to my heart, and I shared this with you, you know, almost 6, going on 7 years ago, around this time, I signed with her, and what a unique experience that was, because to have someone say that I want you, and which is getting ready to tie into my next couple questions that I want to ask you now that you're on the other side of the table as an agent. But before we do, as we transition into our advice section of this podcast, how do you business and show business personally? What lesson was your saving grace, or has been your saving grace?
Oh, wow. That's a pretty big question. What's been my saving grace?
Yes.
I think as I came into the business, being so green,
And what does that mean, green? Because
meaning not overly informed.
Okay.
I find that kids or young people that are coming into the professional theatrical world get a lot of information from their guides based upon, you know, just like they're setting young people up to come to the city and know what to do, etc. Know what questions to ask agents and things like that, that I never had. So because I never had a lot of that information, I think ultimately my saving grace and the way that I ended up creating opportunities for me is that I was always in a position to want to learn the things and to see things a little differently, you know, as my, and create my own truth without the, you know, without any of that sometimes misconception or assumptions that come with what somebody else told me. I was always willing to ask my creative teams things I didn't understand. I was always willing to say, why does this work this way? I was always willing to say, I don't understand what you mean because nobody ever told me. Will you school me? I think,
the reality versus the expectation.
Well, I think reality is such a relative term. Everybody's reality is a little different. But I would say that I was always willing to be curious and ultimately ask questions when I needed to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And I think that was ultimately my saving grace.
Now, this could be the same answer to what you just gave, or this could be a different one. What knowledge about the business was gifted to you
In what, be more specific.
What information was gifted to you that you didn't already know? And again, to that thing of what you just said, you don't know what you don't know. And sometimes kids walk in with this, I don't want to say naivete, but how do you expect to know about the business if nobody properly prepared you for the business?
Got you. Yeah. I think the industry as a whole is, and over the last year and what we've all been dealing with, is kind of shifting and changing. You know, I found that in the conversations that I'm having with the actors I now represent and friends that are still doing it and maybe aren't, you know, in a working relationship with me, I think the common thread for me in it and in the conversations is, you know, as artists who work with other people and who build teams around them, et cetera, I'm finding there's so much to be said about how and who those people are. And maybe this isn't exactly the answer to your question, but what I'm trying to connect here is this idea that for everybody, for every actor out there, certain things are going to resonate mm-hmm. as truth for you and your experience, right? And for me on this side, I have certain things that resonate as truth to me. And I think, you know, to get back at what you're saying, we're something that was said to me is like, take what makes sense to you and leave what doesn't make sense to you, right? That would be maybe something somebody said to me that wasn't hyper specific, but I kind of took and ran with, and I continue to take and ran with or run with, because everybody's getting so much information, especially during quarantine, when all you can do is be a student, right? And try to learn stuff and try to figure out how to get clips up and for auditions and, you know, try to take classes and all that stuff, you know. I'd say that's probably the big thing that was said to me. Take what makes sense, leave what doesn't, you know?
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you're notified when a new episode is posted. Rate and review this podcast, and be sure to share with your friends. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on next week's episode of How to Business in Show Business.